And you are.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, I'm the mother of Eric Thing. And this is Kay Thompson Live, and we are on blogtalkradio.com. What? Kay Thompson, right slash right there?
Backslash
Kay Thompson Live. And we're on every Wednesday night from 8 until 9, and we bring you all kinds of information, news, information, education, a lot of global issues, and we hope that you enjoy them. And we've been getting a lot of feedback from people, and thank you for writing, thank you for calling, and thank you for giving some extra information that for people we should know and talk to, which we think have been doing. And tonight's show is really very exciting again. We're going to be talking to Zan Alexander. Anne has been educated. She's a mediator. She's a member of the New Jersey Association of Professional Mediators. And she was sworn by the United States to New Jersey Supreme Court. And she does civil mediation. So we're going to be talking to her about what's going on and who uses her services as a mediator. As a matter of fact, I did this at one particular point, so I do have some information about it. And we're going to be going to Anne Alexander right now. Hello, Anne. Are you there?
I'm here, Kay. How is everyone?
Everyone's
hello,
fine.
Kay. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm doing fine.
Okay.
Are you ready for me to begin? I'm waiting for you.
Yeah, we're here right now, as a matter of fact. We're glad to have you
okay.
on again. Yeah,
all right.
Is
there any? Yes, I'm here.
Okay. We're going to be talking about mediation, you know, what you do. I wonder if you can explain to people again, even though, you know, we've had you on several times, you know, people have a tendency to forget, you know, the different people that we've had on. And you are a very
all
special
right.
person.
All right. Well, you know, I do civil mediation. I'm at the Superior Court most of the time in Newark. And just a short statement, it's civil mediation is really trying to get parties to settle their disputes in a civil way. You know, in civil mediation, one person speaks at a time. It gives everyone a chance to explain their problem. You can't do this in a courthouse in front of a judge. And it's also cheaper. So to me, it's a win-win situation because everyone gets something, but no one gets everything. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
okay.
I understand. Now, who can use your services, though? Does it cost anything? Or does the person have to request a mediator or what?
No. The court, the way I work mine, many people have their own businesses. I get all of my cases from the court. And there are some people who might send cases to me, but that's the way I work it. And I work in the courthouse. I get a room at Superior Court, and we meet down there, and it's worked out very, very well.
So people who have a case, they can call you and ask for you, or
they can call me, which some of them usually do. They call. And then we make a plan, and we talk about it, and we go from there. It's very, very simple, you know. But
in other words, you're like an attorney, right? But only
I'm not like an attorney. No, not at all.
But you're mediating.
I'm mediating. And I'm working with the two people or the three people to get them to really talk out the problems. Usually, I'm able to finish in an hour, usually. And the people are able to talk. This is the main thing. People are allowed to talk. They feel better. They get it off the chest, you see?
Sure.
And then they get to hear the other person's side. And then we come to a conclusion. It's that simple in most cases. I had, say, for instance, I had a case with a large credit card company and a man who owed them quite a bit. We were able to sit there and talk, and the company decided, well, maybe he doesn't have the money to pay all of the bill, but we'll be happy to get part of it, you see? And they took part of their money. That's the way it works.
So, Mrs. Alexander, when you say, because I see what you mean when you said lawyers, you know, the one side is trying to win over the other side in a legal scenario. You think that kind of the, I guess, the cathartic aspect of people being able to at least express their point of view on their side of the issue is what helps mediation
result? That absolutely helps. And so, and when the people come, they most of them come with their lawyers. But we always say, do you want your lawyer to speak for you, or do you want to speak? And most of the time, even if they're with their lawyers, the people themselves want to talk. And it makes it very easy, I have found. But you see, they do this also. They have what they call a divorce mediation. And it's much cheaper for the people who are getting a divorce rather than to go through the court. So it's being used all over. It really is being used all over.
You know, I would imagine that when it pertains to issues that are a little bit more emotional in nature or in some sort of relationship capacity, perhaps mediation might be something that seems to be better suited as opposed to direct business dealings, for lack of a better term. I don't know. It is.
It really is. And sometimes it works out better, especially if it's in divorce. It's, you know, works out well for the children because everybody can talk.
Mm-hmm.
No, so it works out much better.
And I would imagine that other people feel very secure or very comfortable in talking, because a lot of times when you get into court and you have an attorney, you can't talk.
You can't talk. That's what they're saying. And judges are very smart. They know when cases come to them, they know which cases really need mediation. And that's why so many cases are now being sent to mediation by the judges, because they know there's a standstill. They can't talk. They can't waste the court's time talking. So the courts send many of them right to mediation. Judges are very astute about that. They know when they're going to sit there and listen forever, and they say, this case goes to mediation, just like that. So it makes it very easy.
Yeah. How does someone get a mediator? Do they go to the court first? Do they go to an attorney first? I mean, how does that happen?
Well, some attorneys also do mediation. You know, years ago when the lawyers graduated from law school, mediation was not a part of it. But and many lawyers are now taking mediation classes, so they will know how to mediate, you see? And what they have to do, they go to the New Jersey Association of Professional Mediators, and they can go straight down the list, and they have a number of people, because our organization is very, very large. And they can, any mediator, any type they want to mediate for them. They have people who mediate for construction. They have people who mediate divorce. So they have all types of mediators. And they can find one.
Yeah.
Just by going to New Jersey.
That takes the load off of some of the courts, I would imagine. You know, and
It does. Absolutely, it does.
And do you find that a lot of people are really being mediators now? Because you're an educator, so you do this after.
They tell you, when you become a mediator, don't leave your day job. Most mediators have something else on the side.
Yeah.
Some people, however, make this a business and build up a big business of mediation. Many people just do mediation. But You know, so, and they've been doing it a very, very long time. So if you want to take the time and build up your business to become a mediator and that's all you do, then that's what you do. But a number of people have other things that they do beside mediation.
I see.
Right. We also want to go with Wayne Gilman. I think Wayne is joining us in the discussion. Hello, Wayne.
Hi, good evening, and please forgive me. I am suffering from a bout of laryngitis, but I just wanted to fill in as best as I can of the circumstances, you know. But it sounds like a very fascinating topic. I've heard a great deal about mediation work.
Yeah. Well, it's fun, and it's interesting, and you know, join the group, you know. Not a problem. But I'm going to talk today about immigration. That's one thing I would like to talk about tonight, you know.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to ask you. What is it about immigration, you know, that you're concerned with?
Well, you know that, now I'm going to say this, Kate, sometimes you're cutting off. I can't hear what you're saying, but can you hear me clearly? All right.
Can you hear
then
me?
What, you know, there's been so many negative remarks recently about immigration, and that I was happy to read recently about Raz Baraka, who just launched this ID program in Newark. And I don't know if you've heard about that one. But,
now, can you say?
Yeah, I'll explain that to you. You know, you might be familiar with it. I don't know, but it just started August 1st, 2015. And what he did, his city started a photo ID that documents the documented immigrants and the undocumented immigrants and everyone else who lives in Newark. And this way, they have a large base of who is in their city, you see? And with this ID, photo ID, everyone in Newark, not just the immigrants, everyone in Newark can get all of the services that they have. And anyone over 14 can get an ID card. And Mayor de Blasio started his program, I think, a year or so ago, and he calls his ID program ID-NYC. But his program is a little different from the one in Newark because according to the Latino Voices newspaper, the New York program has a clause protecting undocumented New Yorkers from a very conservative White House in 2017. Now, Mayor de Blasio is thinking outside the box because in when you apply in New York City for an ID, all of your personal information has to be gotten in order for you to get services. But, however, that information can be destroyed by New York City on December 30th, 2016, just 3 weeks before the next president walks into the Oval Office. Because that person going into the Oval Office might say to New York, you have all of this information on these undocumented people. We want it. And Mayor de Blasio made sure that that would not happen. I thought that was a smart move. You know?
Yeah.
And it's part of the effort for New York to keep these people from being deported, and the federal government using their information to deport them. you know. And in November of 2014, Mayor de Blasio signed a bill, and that bill limits the city's cooperation with the deportations conducted by the Immigration and the Customs Enforcement Office, because New York has the largest ID program of any city in the country. They have more than 200,000 New Yorkers who have called already for appointments for an ID card. Now, there are also other cities like San Francisco and Los Angeles, and they all have a similar ID program, but they don't have that clause in there. And they don't have that in the Newark City either. They don't have that in Newark, New Jersey. But in Newark, they have maybe now about 750 people who have signed up. But that's because RAZ's program just started August 1st. Now with the ID card, the residents who previously were unable to open bank accounts, now they can open a bank account and won't have to walk around with all that money in their pockets. I remember last Christmas, I was at the mall, and the person in front of me took out a wad of cash that I swear I had never seen before. And to his bill for what he had bought for the Christmas. And now they don't have to do that because, you know, there are people, especially the wrong kind, who know that these, you know, unauthorized immigrants have lots of money on them because they have no place to put it.
Yeah.
So they are targeted. And to me, now they don't have to carry that amount of money on them. They can get a bank account, you see?
Mm-hmm.
So this ID program is good for everybody. Yeah. And yes, go on.
I'm curious, Wayne, are you familiar with the de Blasio program and approach towards the immigration there?
You're absolutely right. You know, she's correct about that. I'd forgotten about that extension factor, and you know, I'm just curious as to whether or not that would be upheld in the event of a national emergency, because, you know, we may think progressively in terms of trying to protect people, but if there is a change in the administration, which there will be, but an administration that would be far more leading into a conservative element, you know, I just wonder how that would stand up before the high courts in this country.
Well, they can't ask for it. They can't ask for it after they get in. And as de Blasio says, if he sees that that's going to be that kind of president and that kind of administration, he will destroy this, all that information, on December 30th. You see?
Yeah. Right, so they're protected.
He is way ahead of the game already.
Right.
You can't ask for something unless you have the authority to do so, and no one will have that authority until they are sworn in. You see?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's an amazing accomplishment on his part. And I read about it before.
Uh-huh. I know. And but to me, you would think that more of these cities would want to do that, but they haven't, you know, bought into it yet. And then President Obama has wanted to give work permits and protection from deportation to about 4 million of these illegals. And but he's being fought by about 26 states, including Georgia, Florida, and Maine. And they've all filed a lawsuit challenging him. And but wouldn't you think that Jeb Bush, who is running for president, would like to have that type program in Florida since he's running for president? Wouldn't you think that would be good for him?
But not only that, but he's married to a Latina.
His state is fighting against having it.
You're absolutely right. But it's amazing. You know, the thing is that I would hate to think that the clock will be rolled back after 8 years of Obama. I mean, that's the one thing that that worries me the most about this whole upcoming election, because when you see the element that is so wildly enthusiastic about a Donald Trump, that his numbers have not fallen, you know, since his whole campaign started, that worries me. And this, and as far as I'm concerned, Trump is a blatant racist. You know, he's anti-immigration. He talks a lot of nonsense to just stir a certain element in this country, and it seems that that element, for some reason or another, is very supportive of his ideals. But it's right.
As they say, the element is the group that is tired of the people in Washington, D.C. But they also brought something else out about Trump. They showed him in Scotland at that fabulous golf course that he put up recently. And they said that in order to do that, some of the people didn't want to sell the land. So what did he do? He had his workers turn off water from an elderly woman there. And when they found out about it, and they were talking about it on, I think it was CNN, they were showing it, they said, oh, that was an accident. His company didn't mean to do that to the woman. But they did it to her because she wouldn't sign to give her land over.
Donald Trump is not a stranger to that type of activity. I remember him from back in the day when casinos were made legal. Gaming was made legal in New Jersey, and he was building up his empire, his casino empire. And him and Merv Griffin were going back and forth. As you remember, those of us who remember back then, Merv Griffin owned a casino, and they were kind of battling out business-wise in terms of, I guess, property and things like that. But Donald Trump was known for kind of being intimidating the people that had property in Atlantic City that didn't want to sell. And I remember there was a particular elderly woman that had a house right in the middle of all of his Trump Plaza was going up, and, you know, it was in the news that she was doing battle with Donald Trump and was rejecting his offers and was having that type of treatment. And this was back in, must have been the late 70s, very early 80s. So those of us from this particular tri-state area aren't fooled by Donald Trump. It's just ironic, or not ironic, it seems to be kind of funny or weird that the people in the Midwest and areas like that are so attracted to him. And what's even scarier is that these other members or these other individuals running for president really are kind of, almost some try to meet him in terms of saying more outlandish things. If you remember what Governor Mike Huckabee had to say.
I know. It's the same thing with the New Jersey governor, the very same thing. He's got a following, you know, sit down and shut up. He talk, you know. It's the same type person. Imagine those two being president and vice president. How would you like that?
Scary.
It would be interesting in the debate. The two of them in the debate tomorrow, I'm really looking forward to that. That's going to be must-see TV.
Yes,
I think so.
I
know.
Agree.
But, going back to these immigrants and how this ID card is working, you know, now these people can get driver's licenses because, and in Newark, they can use a foreign passport, and they can use a birth certificate. And there's one more thing that they could say that they live in the state to get the ID if they wanted to get a driver's license. Because, you know, in most states you have to have a Social Security number to get a driver's license. But I think you and I would all agree that it would be better to have these people have a valid driver's license, because, you know, most of them have to get to work. And many of them have been, you know, without a valid ID, but I would rather they have one. At least I know that they've taken the test and they're safe drivers. However, after they get the driver's license, are they going to be texting like the rest of the people, you know? That's something you have to worry about. But I swear,
well, you know,
it's always something, isn't it?
Right,
and,
Certainly, I think it's a lot better that you know, a lot of the illegal immigrants are able to come out of the shadows, because there's a certain, there's a whole economy, and that is run on illegal immigration. You know, there's a whole amount of money that is that could be used and taxes and things like that when these people are allowed to come out of the shadows. As you know, as you said, Mrs. Alexander, people carrying all their cash with them. Those individuals or those corporations that make money by hiring illegal immigrants and violating basically human rights and certainly workers' laws, you know, so there's a whole economy that thrives. Individuals
that
do businesses on being able to take advantage of people's human rights when they're in the shadows of immigration in this country. So that is certainly something those are solutions that get rid of those problems right there.
Yeah. Well, see, that's what, what was his name? Osborne, Susie, or whatever her name is. She was talking about that, Kelly Osborne. She made a statement on The View answering Trump, and she really didn't mean it, but she was talking about what you're saying. She said when Trump was going to send all those people back and build a wall and make Mexico pay for it. She said, well, Donald Trump, who's going to clean your toilets? Well, that didn't go over too well with Rosie
Perez.
No, she
was doing that.
But she really didn't mean it that way. What she was saying, Donald Trump has all of these these hotels, and he uses these immigrants to be every hotel you've been in recently. All you see are the immigrants who are cleaning your rooms. And that's exactly what she meant when she said, who's going to clean your toilet? That's what she meant. She didn't mean that only the immigrants, you know, clean toilets, which they don't. But this poor girl has been catching, you know what, for 2 days now for making that statement. And you have said it right. That's what they do. They don't pay them anything. And they use them, and they can't complain, which is unfortunate, you know. But
it is very unfortunate, you know. I mean, that's one part of the working class in this country. I understand in what context she meant that, you know. I mean, it's I don't consider her racist at all, and she was able to correct herself. But you know, Obama still maintains that he has the support of the Latino community because he, quote unquote, is going to give people jobs, you know, and things of that nature. But I mean, it's just the blatant, you know, mishandling of the facts, you know, misrepresenting himself, twisting his words to suit a certain agenda, you know, just to evoke a response from a particular element within the conservative enclave in this political region. It's just ridiculous, and it's not going anywhere. But it's unfortunate that so many people seem to be in support.
I know,
there's
not very much we can do because everyone is saying he's not going to implode. He's smart enough to know to let the other people talk, and he'll answer them back. He's not going to do anything stupid because he's a showman. You know, and he knows exactly how he's going on that stage.
Anne, I want to ask you something about about the program. I remember that there was a department this was in Union County, in Elizabeth, and this young lady was caught between not having her papers. And she was from out of the country, and that she was detained in this department there. and I forget what the food department was, but you would have to have your papers. She couldn't get her papers because she had no way of knowing anybody in the town, and I don't know what had ever happened to her because we talked about
I have no idea. I don't really remember that case, to be frank with you.
Yeah,
I don't remember, but maybe, you know, we can find it on the Internet someplace.
Yeah.
Someone can Google it and find it.
It was a department where they detained, you know, immigrants or people who didn't have their papers or had lost their papers, and they couldn't actually go in. And this was in Union County, I remember, because I was doing that same thing with the, you know, the Supreme Court, but only that was dealing with the attorneys and whatnot. I wasn't doing what you were doing.
Oh, I see.
And I always wondered what happened to this woman because it wasn't. He was with New Jersey.
Oh, my God. Well, I don't know, but maybe we can find out, you know. That might be something we can look up and be able to discuss that one at another time, sure. That would be good, you know, because, as I say, you know, the states, as you've heard me, you know, say, all of these states have different rules. And I learned that California is the only state that will allow these students to apply for financial aid. I thought last year, I thought last year it was, that New Jersey was going to allow them to have financial aid, but it didn't go through. And but a number of the states allow these students to, with their ID, to go to the state schools and pay the same amount as the others pay. But not many of the states do that. But it would be great if they are paying taxes, that they come out of the shadows, as you say, and pay taxes, and they should be able to get many more services than they are getting, you know?
Yeah.
And
it's
really unfortunate. But the worst thing about... Yeah, what'd you say?
I said they're really afraid of making themselves known, so therefore they
stay
in.
Yes, that's true. But most of them, if you go to these state schools... Now, I was at a conference at Rutgers about 2 years ago, and they have a program called the Rutgers Future Scholars. And if you start that program in the ninth grade and you stay with that program summer and winter, you get a four-year scholarship to Rutgers University. And when I was down there and watching the student body, Rutgers has a large majority of Latino students, and they're taking advantage of everything that the U.S. is giving to them. And a number of them are also in that Future Scholars program.
I can't hear you.
Repeat that, please.
I'm sorry. I was just wondering if that was the newer campus of Rutgers.
No, it's the New Brunswick campus.
Okay.
The New Brunswick campus. They have the program, the Future Scholars of America, in Newark. They have it in Camden. And let's see, it's Newark, Camden, New Brunswick. And those are the campuses that those kids go to. And they do a wonderful job. They do a wonderful job with those students. So it's something, if listeners are listening, it's something that they should look into, because if you live in Camden or New Brunswick or Newark, you're eligible to apply for that future Rutgers Future Scholars Program. And they really should do that.
Right.
And it's really for those families who these students would be the first ones to go to college. That's what it's geared to.
Yeah,
that's what it's. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
But there's One other thing that I'd like to say before I close, and that's with this ID program, it's not protecting the people in several states against police coming up to them and asking them about their status. If they are pulled over, or if they could walk against the light, or if they do the tiniest infraction, the police have the ability, and the law is with them, to go to those people and ask, where do you live? What is your status? What is your this or that? It's really, I feel, horrible. And there are only a few states who are doing that, you know, who allow that. And one is Utah, another one is Georgia. And they can do that to these people. And I was thinking that we have states' rights, right? We have states' rights, and states can do what they please. But after I was reading about these different programs and the way different states do things, I was thinking that the federal government and not the states should have the right to do everything that's involving immigrants, that the states would have absolutely no say-so in what happens with immigrants. Because when immigrants come from one state to another, they don't know what their rights are. Everybody's different, you know?
Yeah.
And this should be a federal program, not a state program. And I know the people will scream, you know, states' rights, states' rights. But there's some things the states are not getting right. And it ought to be a federal program. And I don't think we would have all this problem if the federal government would take over. Now, you know, they would have, right now, these people are using the emergency rooms to get help, and this way they could get some of the other services. I don't know what you think, but, you know, you state your opinion on what you think, but my opinion is that states should have absolutely no right when it comes to immigration, because every one of these states is doing things differently. And it shouldn't be that way. So what do you think about that?
That's been the problem all along.
Mm-hmm.
That has been the problem.
You know, yeah.
Depending upon what state you're in, everybody
has
their own you know, set of standards and rules, and it's just horrific how it plays out. And,
that's right.
I just don't know, and the federal government to a certain extent has to take some of the blame too, because two or three administrations back, as much as I supported the Clintons, when Bill Clinton allowed NAFTA to go through, a lot of the problems that were happening economically in places like Mexico, you know, I don't know what his vision was. He's even apologized for some of his actions, but the fact of the matter is, this is what it's resulted in. Mass
That's
confusion.
Right, absolutely. We lost jobs, everything.
Exactly. Right. You know, just made matters worse. Yeah.
That's right. And so everybody's paying for it, you know, right now. So I don't know what the answer will be, but all I can say is that I hope something good comes out of all of these cities trying to do good, you know. And I hope the Mayor Raz Baraka's program, I hope it really gets momentum and they get everyone to sign up, because, as I said, it's not just for the immigrants, it's for everybody in the city. And I hope it goes, I hope it works out very well for him, you know.
Well, an ID program is, you know, when I talk about the interesting thing about an ID program, just in general, apart from the immigration issue, is that when we talk about these states that have, where citizens' rights are being, their voting rights are being denied because they don't have the proper ID, I've always wondered, one of the things I've wondered is, how do they get to the point, how do adults get to the point where they have no ID? Because it seems
some of these very elderly people in North Carolina. I mean, some of them can't find a birth certificate. And they've been voting for years.
I was going to say, in those cases, of course, where the elderly folks have been voting for 50, 60 years, there's clearly a form of ID that could be acceptable. But in states like North Carolina, where they're trying to impede and roll back on people's voting rights, they want to have these very strict and strident requirements for voting rights, where they don't want to accept perhaps a library card or a card that the senior citizen might have been using, a Social Security card at one time, or whatever these cards were. In particular states like, as I said, North Carolina and Texas as well, we're denying these particular forms of ID that the seniors have been using for years. And when they were able to get in these new regulations in regards to voting rights, that's when we saw, you know, the Republicans, their ground game is very devious, to say the least, but they're good at what they do in terms of putting in these state officials and overturning these state legislatures and eventually overturning these laws on voter IDs within the states and rolling back citizens' voter ID laws and trying to affect these presidential outcomes. And that's, I believe that's also part of the reason why they want to come down or deny the immigrants from coming out of the shadows and having some sort of amnesty. You know, people talk about amnesty as if, you know, that's such a bad word, but, you know, the main thing is to bring people out of the shadows and make everybody a part of society. And, you know, offer people ways to identify themselves. You can cut back on a lot of things that probably would go on in our society. Certainly, obviously, terrorism. And then also you have to get the NRA, people like the conservative gun rights owners who don't want to have these background checks on people and check people's IDs because they want to sell their guns so quickly. An ID program is one that would cut both ways, and I think that would be quite beneficial overall in the community. Mm-hmm. Of course, the argument from a lot of conservatives would be that they're just trying to get all Americans in one big database for whatever reason. Obviously, that's always kind of one of the arguments that they throw out.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. And, of course, with these states where they are trying to make the red line around different groups where they can't vote in a group, and mostly it's in the African American society, and those governors that are being put in, most of the places are being put in with Coke money, you know?
That's right.
You know, Coke is everywhere, and they've been very quiet recently since Donald Trump jumped on them. That's the one good thing he did do, but the Koch brothers have bought all the elections. And this is what the people were saying. You buy the presidency. You buy everything. You buy the government. You know, you buy the governorship. And the Koch money is all over the place. And those who don't agree with what they say, they don't get the money, because here, to run for president, you have to be a millionaire almost, you know?
Well, at the very least.
I know you're their friends, as some people do, you know?
That's true,
African-American, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised to see that Carson is still up there. I don't know who's backing him for this presidency, but he's right up there with the group of 10, you know? Ben Carson, but I don't know where he's getting his money to do as much as he's doing, you know?
What is he doing? What is he doing other than being there? You know, I haven't heard a word from him, and I've been listening
that's all he's doing, but he's there, and in order to stay in the race, he must be doing something, but I can't find out what.
Well, I think the Republican National Party wants to show a symbol of inclusiveness. This has been their agenda since 2000. So the deal is that they know full well he's not a Barack Obama. As bright and as intelligent as he is a surgeon, He doesn't have the gravitas nor the finesse to run this country. But it will leave him out there like a symbol, you know, just to make it show, oh, we're not just us. We're not a segregated party at all. You can look at Ben Carson and the guy that was from Pennsylvania. What's his name? Mike. I can't. The one who used to head the party, the national RNC. You know.
Uh-huh.
So,
and then there's Jindal also.
Oh, please.
Yeah.
Jindal.
From New Orleans.
Right. I don't know. I don't want to get started on that. I don't want to get started.
I know.
Well,
get started.
Now.
Tell me what you're thinking. I'd like to know.
No. You know, because I unfortunately have some of that in my background, and I just think it's an embarrassment, you know, to the East Indian community that somebody, but there's so many of them. Oh, boy, I'm hearing my voice going now. You know, there's so many of them that think that way that just I find it despicable because, you know, race, the epitome of racism in this world is right here in the United States, you know.
Oh, yes.
And just because you may look slightly different doesn't mean that you're accepted.
No.
But, again, I just think it's just patronage on the part of the party, and that's it, you know. And
What does Carson stand for? I haven't heard a word from him. He's there. We see him. We see him at different times, but we don't hear him. I haven't heard his voice yet. And I have been really... I'm sorry? Say that again?
He complains about Obamacare, and I pay a heavy price because of the age group I'm in now, and maybe it's all based on income. But, you know, there was a time when this country had no insurance for people who were indigent. So at least Obama tried to do something. And I don't see where the Republican Party has come up with a better plan.
No, but they swear they're going to, you know, close it out and get rid of it. And if they do, they're not hurting anyone but themselves because...
Exactly.
So many people who, even though it's more expensive than they thought, there's so many people who for the first time have health coverage. It may not be what they want, but
exactly.
It's something that they have, you know?
At least they have a coverage. That's right. Absolutely right.
That's right. At least they have something. And
right.
They've had many people who've been on the air just, you know, talking, well, it's the first time I've had health coverage, and I'm for it. And these are people in the Midwest who they interview, you know? These are not people in the inner cities. So I think they will shoot themselves in the foot if they get rid of Obamacare. They just don't want him to have a legacy. That's all.
That's
you know?
That's all it is.
That's all it is. They do not want him to have a legacy. And that's why they're fighting him on this Iran deal. You know, they don't want a legacy for him.
Even they're even willing to throw the United States under the bus, really, with the Iran deal.
That's right.
So all they don't like this black president. Okay.
No,
and
they
stupid.
Don't. And if you remember what they said, the first thing they said, Boehner said, we're going to do everything we can to keep him from having a success. Boehner said that on the air, and they meant it.
That's right. You sure did.
Well, they meant
I'm so glad
know?
Boehner's son-in-law is a Jamaican. You know, I'm so glad that he's getting into the Jamaican culture. So, you know, he could talk all he wants about Obama, but Jamaica, Boehner's daughter is married to a person of color. And,
who is
so
that?
Maybe, John Boehner, his daughter.
His daughter?
Is married to a black man from Jamaica.
Oh, you don't hear him say that, do you?
That way. No, he doesn't make a big thing out of that. You know.
What is that source based on there, Wayne? Are you sure about that?
I am certain of that. Look it up. He was at the wedding, dancing reggae. or Reggie, as they call him. You know, I'm serious. Dana's daughter is married to a Jamaican black, a Rastaman, dreadlocks. So now he'll get it. It's in the family now, so he'll get it.
He'll get it. Good.
Yeah.
And he'll, and then he'll rue the day that he tried to destroy Obama, you know?
Right, exactly.
He really will.
Yeah.
I tell you. But, you know, Obama is now coming out and really, I feel, really doing what he should have done 8 years ago. And
but
the first mistake he made, I've always said that. His first mistake was when he gave that speech and that man called him a liar. And do you remember that? When man State of the Union, and the man called him a liar. At that time, Obama should have called the security to put him out. And if he had done that, he would have gotten more respect than he ever received. But because he, as his stepfather used to say, Obama was raised in Indonesia and as a young boy, and we do not confront. We are not confrontational. And he grew up not being that way. But too bad he didn't learn it until this year when he's doing things his way and everybody sees it. But I do believe, if he had put that man out that first year, everyone else would have walked on eggs. I can bet that.
And maybe his life might have been in danger also, because, you know, the thing that I felt that he was somewhat tepid because he wanted to have a second term, you know.
Uh-huh.
And it's only
I don't think so. I think he would have had a second term even faster if he had been more forward with these people, because everybody could see they're walking over you, they're talking about you. I mean,
right.
You have to have some strength and some grit. His wife has more grit than he does.
You know what?
Michelle.
Someone else said that today. I heard a friend of mine say that today.
Absolutely.
You know?
If that had happened to Michelle Obama, that man would have been out on his ear in a second.
I
don't know if I agree with that, but certainly he could have been a little bit more forceful at times. But I kind of think that he's kind of done some things all right. I kind of played some of his hand a couple of times, not too bad in terms of recognizing that he doesn't have all that much power. You know, you really see the limitations of the presidency when you see how they treat Barack Obama. Certainly, in terms of him not even being able to get any type of assistance or really kind of a minimal compromise from the Republicans in the House of Representatives. The Senate is one thing, but there seemed to be a lot more. I think people expected him to be able to come into the White House using his bully pulpit a little bit more forcefully than I believe he was able to. And I don't know if that's because of history, how he came in history as the first African-American president. And there were probably, I'm quite sure, there were probably forces that were there that previous presidents didn't have to deal with when Barack Obama took office as president of the United States. So I can imagine, you know, people always think the scariest thing that the president is not really, you know, that he answers to someone. And so you can imagine who was putting pressure on this president if other previous presidents have felt pressure of truly powerful people in the world. So, and being that the president is basically a CEO, you know, he's only as good as his workforce, I would suppose. But
that's right. But he surrounded himself with people who were not that bright. You know, absolutely, I didn't feel that he picked the best people because, as you realize, his second term and everybody disappeared.
Yeah.
You know? Everybody disappeared his second term.
I thought him rather too trusting and believing in the process and the mm-hmm. office of the president. And I think that he was certainly underestimated how little respect that these people actually had for the office of the presidency when it came to being held by a black man.
That's right.
I mean, really, they kind of lost their mind and really trampled on the respect for the office of the presidency of the United States. I mean, I haven't seen treatment like that since I've seen how they treated Bill Clinton. And Bill Clinton actually gave the Republicans more ammunition to come at him with, and certainly Barack Obama, in terms of the level of disrespect that they've given him.
That's so, right, absolutely. But Bill had different supporters, too. And look at all the money he's made mm-hmm. since he came out. It didn't even hurt him. And somebody brought up, what is her name, Lewinsky again? And mm-hmm. and it just passed right over. It just passed right over. You know?
Yeah. Well, the one thing with Bill Clinton, he was very bright, and you could see the difference in contrast to George W. Bush once he became elected.
Yes.
You know, Bush had a lot of smart, you know, people around him, but mm-hmm. he was totally inept, and
absolutely.
He wasn't a bad guy. You know, the thing is, Bush was a decent person, but just not bright. And that's the problem.
No, he wasn't bright. And when he was running for president, everyone said at that time that Jeb should have been running when George W. ran because they said he was the better one. But they put George Bush in, I swear they did, because they knew they could do with him what they wanted. He was a little puppet, as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly.
You know?
Right.
He did exactly what he was told. And Jeb Bush... I don't think they would have been able to do that to Jeb Bush. Look how they lied and said, you know, they had all of this stuff over in Afghanistan and what have you. And there was nothing there, but they were able to push him around. They wouldn't have been able to do that for Jeb, I don't think.
And he had some very prominent black faces in the administration then, too, you know.
Yeah,
but
that's true. That's true.
Also, I think that Obama was being a little more cautious. I think he knew that he was in a very vulnerable position, you know, even though he was surrounded by all kinds of security and whatnot. You know, I just thought he was being very cautious, and I thought smart. But anyway, we have just a few more minutes here. Not even a few more minutes. Just but Ann Alexander, I am telling you, this has turned into a very hot political topic. And you have been on, and I enjoyed all this information. And you are so right. And we thank you for being on. With all
I thank you, and good night to everybody.
Good night to you, too.
Okay, goodbye.
All right, thank you. Very good. Loved it. Absolutely. Wayne?
This has been I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm just hoping that my voice would have held up for the hour. You know, I'd like to give special thanks to Puerto Rican rum and seltzer water for allowing me to do this now.
Okay,
wait.
Until Wednesday.
Right.
Okay,
have a good one. All right. My best to you, Eric, and everyone.
All right. Thank you for listening in once again to the K Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. You can listen to K Thompson every week, every Wednesday at 8 to 9 p.m., or you can listen to the show anytime you want because they're archived. See you next week at 8 p.m. here on Blog Talk. Get into the discussion. It's live on Wednesdays. Thank you.